Good morning, folks, and welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. We start our day off today with a look at national news and what's going on around us. And we saw yesterday, we were there, I posted on Facebook, demonstrations around the country at airports across America who are demonstrating against the executive order by Donald Trump to ban people from certain countries from entering the United States. And I've been on back and forth with a lot of people who are very pro-Trump on Facebook about this. We can talk a bit about the misnomers and misunderstandings about the reality of facts on the ground there. It's also and we saw these kind of demonstrations happening by the millions across America at airports throughout the United States, and seems to have given some Democratic leadership some backbone to stand up and say something, governors and others, as well as here in Baltimore, we saw Congressman Sarbanes, Congressman Cummings, and Congressman Ruppersberger show up at BWI last night while we were there. It was an interesting group of people who showed up. As I started writing about it today on Facebook, my commentary was it was yarmulkes and hijabs standing together, which was something that was really interesting to see. And we'll talk about all that. And also, this just as important was what happened here on the National Security Council over the last few days, where CIA director, newly appointed Mike Pompeo, along with the director of National Intelligence, along with the Chief of Staff, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, will not be sitting on the National Security Council full-time, but instead, Steve Bannon will, the who many of us call a white nationalist, which is what I will call him, who is going to be sitting on that council. He's also the man who has been given credit for writing the speech that Trump gave when he was inaugurated, as well as being one of the architects, along with Rudy Giuliani, of his present immigration ban that's taking place. So we're going to wrestle with all that. He's not been in the House for a long time, but love his wit and mind. He's in the House now. Bob Sonnenby, editor of the Daily Howler. Good to have you with us, Bob.
Good to be here, Mark.
Eugene Craig III is back in the House and in the House. Grassroots activist, third vice chair of the Maryland Republican Party.
Former. Things have changed in the last couple months.
Yeah, they have. Did you say former?
Former.
You no longer...
Nope.
Should take that off our guest list.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
But it's all fun and games still.
Okay. We'll have to hear more about that. And Dr.
Hey, in the words of the great Joe Stephan, he's telling me still give him hell.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, who is Associate Professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, a co-host and a host here on the guest host here on the Mark Steiner Show. We'll be hearing more from her in the coming months here as a guest host. And co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities, as well as the Obama 2.0 book that she helped edit and ran the conference here in Maryland. Good to have you, Kimberly, back
in
the
morning.
House.
Good morning.
And you all join us here, 410-319-8888. Please, with your thoughts, were you at any of these demonstrations at the Dulles Airport, if you're living in this community, at Dulles Airport or in front of the White House or at BWI or anywhere you might be listening from around the country? We'd like to hear your ideas and thoughts, whether you agree or disagree. I mean, you voted for Trump. We want to hear from you, too. Why do you think this ban was an important thing to do? 410-319-8888. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can send us an email to talk@steinershow.org, but 410-319-8888. So where do we begin? Let's begin with this ban. And then I do want to talk about the National Security Council, because this is unprecedented since the time of Richard Nixon, when he attempted to do this, but was stopped in many ways from doing the exact same thing that we've seen Trump do at this moment. But this ban has caused a uproar, and many people are saying it is not a ban against Muslims. But clearly, Rudy Giuliani has said that he was consulted on this, and was trying to help Trump figure out how to make this legal without using the word Muslim in it, pushed by Steve Bannon. Known for kind of his racist anti-Semitic tomes that he has written over the years, and is now on the National Security Council as well. So our initial reactions here, what we're seeing around the country and what this means. And Bob, we haven't heard from you long. Let me start with you, if you don't mind, Bob, sorry, just because we haven't heard your voice in the air in a few months.
Yeah. Oh, my reaction is... I don't have words anymore for my reaction. I don't, and I don't mean that as an insult to people who voted for Trump and supported Trump and might think this is a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea for progressives to go around trashing Trump supporters. I think we should learn how to explain our views better. That's my basic view. But I must say, you know, what I've been writing, what I started writing last week is, I'm sorry, we have to stop arguing about is President Trump telling lies or falsehoods. I think the question of mental health has to be articulated. Some major journalists were inching that way last week. Ruth Marcus in the Washington Post jumped off the cliff yesterday and said mental health several times, that it's frightening. The possibility of mental health problem is frightening. I agree with that. I just think that's where it is now. And I think everything that happens is going to involve turmoil and incoherence and incompetence. Not that it's crazy to be concerned about international terrorism. It isn't crazy. But everything done is going to have the hint of crazy to it, and I think it has to be discussed frankly, and so that's where sort of I'm headed at this point. Also, it's a terrible thing. For 50 years, we've agreed the Goldwater Rule, we can't go here with politics. You don't discuss psychiatric issues as part of politics. That rule has served us well for 50 years. I think it stopped serving us well in the last couple of years.
And you hear some Trump supporters have gone back and forth with say things like, look, only 200 people got delayed at airports, and everybody else goes crazy.
It's crazy.
Gene Craig, formerly vice party chair of the Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so, you know, I got the chains have been taken off. So, you know, put this in proper perspective, right? So two things happened Friday. We had the Muslim ban come into play. But then we also had a proclamation on the Holocaust, which, you know, just so happened to neglect purposefully not use the word Jewish, or, you know, give some kind of, you know, explicit and intentional connotation to the 6 million, you know, Jewish lives. You know, it's the reason we know the Holocaust as the Holocaust. You know, I'm a person that comes from the Justin Amash wing of the Republican Party, the Rand Paul wing of the Republican Party. I'm a constitutional, you know, libertarian conservative. This ban based on religion, this ban based on national origin, that, you know, went as far-reaching as to, you know, detain persons that carry green cards, persons that were legal residents, and even citizens. I have friends that whose parents are citizens of the United States of America who were detained. So, you know, it's ridiculous. You know, I was a person that spoke out against Barack Obama's out of control use of executive orders, and it would be hypocritical of me if I did not, you know, hold Donald Trump to the same fervor and fire and accountability.
Especially in the first 2 weeks of his
office. Oh, yeah, first 2 weeks.
Yeah. I think for me, what I found most interesting is I certainly have a problem with much of what I've seen take place over the last 2 weeks, and even more so what happened on Friday. But I find it interesting how the media, as well as average citizens, seem to be conflating issues around immigration. And all of a sudden, this ban becomes about keeping out illegal immigrants. Mm. And you're thinking, this has nothing to do with illegal immigrants, because if there is one population that will not be able to get in this country illegally, it would be Muslims. And so the idea.
Your name is Jamal Muhammad.
So the idea that we are suggesting this has to do with trying to minimize illegal immigration in this country for the good of the rest of us Americans is just absurd. And I'm very disturbed that we don't seem to be delineating that accurate information in the media and have so many citizens responding in ways that then almost justify in their heads what's actually taking place.
You know, partly that's because there's always so much confusion surrounding any action or any executive order in this case. There's so much confusion and misunderstanding mm-hmm. and contradiction. Yes, the green card. No, the green card. Yes, the green card. There's so much chaos that no one ever gets clear on elementary facts about any. And then we're on to the next chaos. And this, it's not 2 weeks. It's 10 days.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is this. When you have Border Patrol agents, you know, working under the guise of their superiors, you know, explicitly not adhering to a judicial order.
That's
a constitutional crisis,
man.
That's
huge.
That's huge. I mean, that's huge. But I mean, that's reminiscent of Little Rock 8. I mean, I'm being honest here. I mean, you know.
You can hardly blame them, though, because over the course of like 24 hours, mm-hmm. there were four reversals as to what the
That's
order
right.
said,
but, yeah.
coming from different officials. So the rule of law is gone. It's now we're at the mercy of what official said something 10 minutes
ago. It's the law of Bannon.
Yes.
I think that what you're seeing here is, again, this thing with Trump. And folks, please join us at 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts, and I do want to hear from folks who think Trump is right. But Trump, once again, does things without thinking. He just puts it out there. And there was no thought. I mean, whether you agree or disagree with President Barack Obama's executive orders, another debate and discussion. At least Barack Obama thought about what he was writing.
Yeah.
And made he consulted. It,
and consulted. And put depth in it so you wouldn't be confused about what that order meant.
That's right.
What you're seeing with Donald Trump is he just writes these things and throws them out there.
Are working.
Just like his tweets.
Makes it a PR opportunity to take pictures, show the actual
turns the thing around.
Right, shows the executive order to make sure everyone knows what he has done.
Like a little boy in the second grade.
Then he moves forward.
The thing is this, you know, you cannot, you know, when it comes to getting in and out of the country, when it comes to our national security, when it comes to, you know, letting folk in and out, you cannot write an executive order of that stature and that magnitude without consulting justice. Without consulting DHS, without consulting defense, without consulting state. I mean, literally, you know, we're getting reports out that, you know, Secretary of State Kelly was literally on a conference call discussing the executive order, and it happened to turn on the TV on a plane, and they see the orders being signed. I mean, this is the Bannon amateur hour. You know, one thing I will say about Donald Trump is that the guy is literally some of the folk that are around him, whoever's the chief principal influencer in his circle or in his influence circle at that time. And literally Steve Bannon right now is going to cause his White House to crash and burn before it even got off the ground.
It's an amateur hour unless it's done deliberately to create chaos, which I don't think anyone can be certain that isn't part of the deal. I don't know. I have no idea.
I will say this.
It's a possibility.
Looking at his senior team, you know, none of them have run the government before. You know, Mike Pence is there, but, you know, the vice president, you know, it's not like a Cheney-Bush type of situation where both have some government experience, or Obama-Biden situation where both have some government experience. You know, if I have, you know, eight people around me that are outsiders and rah-rah, yes, I'm an outsider, but outsiders and rah-rah, and I get this one or two people here that are coming in with, you know, an entire career of government, I'm going to, of course, lead on these senior advisors that I've known and that got me elected. You know, and that's what's happening right now.
So before we go to the phones here, you know, there are a number of things here. And one of those things is I was looking at the kinds of people this affected. Let me just tell a couple of stories here. I think it's important. And these came from a number of newspapers around the country, some Washington Post, New York Times, and other places. An Iranian couple. He runs a tech company that does business with Google and more. They're in love. She's an artist. They're married. They sent her back to Iran, even though she was a resident, had a green card, worked in this country, lived in the Bay Area. They sent her back to Iran. An Iraqi family who sold everything they had. This guy worked for the U.S. in Iraq, was leaving from another country where they were hiding out because he worked for Iraq. They were denied and sent back to the place they came from. A Syrian woman who lived in Saudi Arabia, who was trying to come here on a visa to let her stay for a week to visit and take care of her ailing mother who lived in Ohio. She was sent back. A Somali refugee in Kenya who was given permission to settle in the United States after 2.5 years of living in a camp in Kenya. Finally got all his paperwork right. They would not let him on the plane in Nairobi.
Mm.
A Syrian woman living in Turkey, pregnant, coming to Ohio as well to live with her family who had now set a place for her up, and she had all of her papers in order. And an Iraqi father in Sweden who had been separated from his family for years finally got a visa to come in. He was sent back to Sweden. So, I mean, these are the terrorists that we're keeping from America. Mm-hmm. While what we haven't done, and I don't agree with any of these orders, but I mean, you know, the places where terrorists have come from, Saudi Arabia, yep. UAE,
Egypt.
Qatar. Right? Egypt, they're not included Turkey. In any of this.
No.
We're afraid of them.
There's money to be made.
I mean, the thing is this, you know, and that's a big point right there. I mean, we haven't been attacked by anybody on American soil since, 1973, 75, you know, at least 30, 40 years from, you know, the countries that were listed. I mean, we have entire Somali, you know, populations here in America where that are absolutely peaceful. absolutely, entire Sudanese populations in America, absolutely peaceful. So, you know, these are, you know, one more time, this is something that was orchestrated by Steve Bannon and Steve and the other Steve. And, you know, it's a, you know, we're living in interesting times here. I mean, I do think, you know, this is going to be, this may be one of the few times you actually see Congress assert its power.
We'll see. Let's go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Email us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. We'll be checking those tweets as well. I know our tweets are going out. We want to get them back from you. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Clarence, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Morning, Clarence.
Yeah, good morning. I was just thinking that it's extravated emotional outbursts manifesting themselves in executive orders. But my question would be, does anybody know what the exact language in that was taken in the court that the judge signed? What was the language in that? If anybody knows or you don't mind answering. Thank you.
Yes, I actually was looking at that earlier. The order was very limited that she did. I think she being Judge Ann Donnelly. That put in an emergency, an ACLU challenging the executive order barring refugees. She granted a temporary stay, ordering the refugees and others detained at airports could not be sent back to their home countries, which she stopped. Everything else has not been stopped. The order hasn't been stopped. It wasn't called illegal, but what was stopped was the ability to send these people back to the countries that they were coming from. That was the limit, I think, of her ban.
So what does it say regarding, because it seemed to be a lot of media coverage around lawyers trying to get access to people and not being able to do
and
so.
And I've heard that too. I don't know all the details about that, but that's what I read as well. That people can't get to people who are stuck inside.
Habeas corpus does not suspend at American airports or ports of entry. You know, your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights don't suspend at ports of entry. You know, it's part of the reason why, you know, we don't try terrorists on our lands, because the second they hit that sand, that, you know, ounce of American airspace are now falling under the jurisdiction of American laws and governance and constitution. And, you know, folk that are being detained and not given access to their lawyers, their rights are being violated. That's what it is. Their rights are being violated. It's a blatant violation of their rights. I mean, you know, and it's not like, you know, the actual, you know, maybe even under the worst circumstances, suspected 22, 23, 24-year-old that may actually be radicalized. You're holding five-year-olds. Five-year-old kid. Five-year-old kid at Dulles. 84-year-old grandmother at Dallas-Fort Worth. These are the folk that are being detained.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I'm going to go to the fact of the phones here. When you look at the list, as I'm doing at this moment, of where senators stand, I have a entire list that I will post later. It's a Google Doc that was sent to me. It says, who has opposed this? Almost all Democrats and a couple of Republicans. Almost every Republican in Congress has not said a word. In the Senate, I mean, has not said a word about this, except for the only people who said something are the ones who are either opposed or are skeptical or think there's a problem with it. But none of the others have said a word. So let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hello, I'd like to make a comment. I agree with what the president's doing.
Okay.
And he said it when he was campaigning. And I voted for Barack Obama twice. He just wants to put his ban on so he gets a hold of it. I mean, the shooting down in Florida tonight, though. They had the shooting in Bernardino. Both were, they had Islamic, you know, figures. And he just wants to do this so he can get a hold of it. I mean, to me, the America was getting on tape.
Well, Tim, let me ask this one quick question about that. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and so when you talk about what happened in Florida or what happened in San Bernardino, none of those people who created these attacks came from places where this ban is taking place. They came from other places.
Well, I know that they had the thought process from where they came from. President Trump wants to put a hold on this so he can get a hand on. I mean, I don't want to end up like England. And France, they have neighborhoods in France where the police do because they want to be. So America's not like that. We have law and order here.
Well, we're also a multicultural society and a multicultural community and a society where actual religious freedom is protected, society where, you know, difference and, you know, First Amendment protections exist. You know, those things aren't necessarily in existence in Europe, and Europe also has its own issues. You know, you would never see a Brexit happening in the United States because of our racial and cultural makeup. But you will see that in Europe, and you are going to see it in Europe, and it's going to play out more in Europe.
And I just want to let you know that Gene Craig, the former third vice chair of the Republican Party here in the state of Maryland, but again, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier to you, Tim, as well, I'll wave over here to Bob, is that the people we talk about who have committed these acts, not saying we should ban people from Kuwait or Egypt or
Palestine. Yep.
But they none of those countries were on that list. Yep. There have been no record of attacks from any of the places where people are. That many of these people, like half of the Arab refugees that Obama did let in, were actually Christians, you know, like he said, that came to this country from Iraq and other places. And it is true, as some other people have written to me who support Donald Trump, that Barack Obama did not let Christians in. Well, 1% of the Syrian refugees that were allowed in, which were very few, 12,000, I think I'm right, were Christian, only 1%. But that, I think, has more to do with the fact that Assad is protecting Christians than anything else, because he protects what he says are minorities, of which he is one. Not being pro-Assad. I'm just giving the reality of what's happening in Syria. Let me be clear about that. Bob.
Yeah, I'll just say again, in response to the caller, I want to repeat what I said earlier as a challenge to progressives. It isn't crazy to be concerned about quote-unquote international terrorism.
No, it's not
it
crazy.
Isn't crazy to it's be concerned crazy. About events that have happened in this country and in Europe, and it's a challenge to progressives to respond to people who are inclined to think, you know, on balance, this is probably a pretty good idea. It's a challenge to progressives to respond to those people, not by name-calling them, but by creating arguments that explain an alternate view. And we've done a very poor job of that over the last year.
A lot of
name-calling.
So, I mean, and I think there was every telling that Tim, who – Tim, you still on the line? You still there? Is Tim still on the line?
I think
– Is he? Tim, you there?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Well, I don't know you're still there. I'm sorry, man. So let me ask one quick question, and before we have to take a break. So you said you voted for Barack Obama twice, and then you voted for Donald Trump. I have other friends who've done the same. So tell me why you made that switch.
When he first got in, he was saying we're going to save money on life, health insurance and save money on prescriptions. And my insurance right now is the most terrible insurance you would ever have in your life, and I'm paying almost double the money for it. He lied about that, and it just seems like the people riding in the streets, he was like thinking he shouldn't have stuck his nose in, and he was just letting people just tell us to do whatever the hell they want. The United States is law and order. If you want to protest, fine, but you ain't got to support property, and he should have got on TV and calmed the damn right in the butt. I'm just sorry. I voted for him twice, and I really thought he would make a change, but honestly, I think he made race relations doubly worse than when he got in, and now Trump's in there. Let's give the man a chance, and let's see what he's going
to
do.
All right, Tim, appreciate the call. We have to take a very short break. We're going to come right back, and we'll have more commentary from our three guests who are here with us. You can respond to Tim and the others. 410-319-8888 is the number. We're here with Eugene Craig III, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, and Bob Summerby, and you at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way back to this conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank, belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. And we are here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at UMBC, co-host and guest host here on the Mark Steiner Show, co-editor of Blackberries and Redbones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities, and co-editor of Obama 2.0, Eugene Craig III. How do I introduce you now, man?
Former vice chair, brother.
Former vice chair of the Real Estate Republican Party.
Yeah.
and Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler. And you all are 410-319-8888. So, and I think, Bob, I want to come back in a minute to talk about what you're talking about is not demonizing people who voted for Trump. I think that's very critically important for us not to do. But before we get to this call, let me just raise another issue, a separate issue.
For practical purposes, go ahead.
No, also, I think,
also for human purposes, but right. Just for plain old political practical purposes. Go ahead.
So this is the dangerous precedent inside this White House. I mean, there was an article written by a couple of people. One of them is actually a professor at Hopkins here, who, and I'm going to put this out there, who think that Donald Trump is mentally unstable. All right. So you have Steve Bannon, who has written all these pieces about black folks and race and put some really racist stuff on his website at Breitbart, really racist stuff at Breitbart, who has made anti-Semitic statements. His ex-wife even said he hates Jews, and the way he described them to his children. And so he has a huge amount of influence. Now, now for the first time in history, that kind of person is on the National Security Council.
Yeah.
The CIA director is taken off of the council, except for special meetings. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is taken off, and as well as the director of National Intelligence. Mm. So you have political ideologues who are going to be on the National Security Council, which to me is a hugely, hugely dangerous precedent. I think in some ways, maybe more dangerous in the long run than this ban, which is going to be fought and may be stopped. Maybe not, but it has to be stopped. But this to me is a really, really, really significant.
You can't have an effective security council without intelligence agencies or the guy that's literally, you know, the head, you know, chief of all the military branches. I mean, you know, what is security out of, you know, actual security and intelligence? I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, you cannot have an effective security council made up of advisors that aren't actually dealing with the actual intelligence or dealing with the actual military.
But even on his campaign trail, Trump was very clear in believing that he had, as an outsider, the wherewithal and knowledge to perform better at intelligence than all of
those greater than the generals.
Yes, sitting at the table. And so that poses tremendous concern about how then are we actually doing intelligence in our nation, and what might we find ourselves up against as a result of him not listening to the folks who this is very much a part of who they are and what their work is about.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's part of the strange stream of commentary that comes from Trump. When he went to the CIA, he said you could tell how smart he is because his uncle was a professor. I mean, who says these things? And they're 70.
My uncle was a professor. I'm really, really smart.
I mean, really,
he says that all the time.
MIT. Yes.
But the thing about Bannon is, you know, for someone who was elevated to this high level of national importance, when is the last time he gave a videotaped interview? No one has ever even seen this guy. You know, he's like this Rasputin figure now. I mean, really, I mean, he's now on the NSC and clearly seems to be directing the world. And I don't think I've ever seen videotape. You can go on YouTube. There's a couple of little clips on YouTube. But he's hidden away. No one has any idea what he's really about from looking at him. It's a very strange situation.
So if I can tell you, I mean, white privilege is very much a part of the concepts that I deal with in the classroom. And I have to tell you, I can't think of a better example right now than Steve Bannon as being someone who has access to such tremendous amount of power and has nothing that substantiates or shows how he was able to get there, especially in a meritocracy, which America considers itself.
Exactly, and I think that's really true. I mean, and you're seeing it who is inside this White House and who they're appointing, and it is literally the wealthiest, whitest male leadership.
But you know,
we've had in a long, long time.
I will say this. I think I'm pretty sure you guys probably may disagree with me here. I think the firewall for our country is going to come in the appointees. You know, typically what happens in a lot of, you know, especially at national level when it comes to government, is that you'll have the actual secretary or the actual agency director that has the actual legal authority to actually run the agency. And then you'll have, you know, advisor XYZ that's there to, you know, keep an eye on things for the White House. You know, right now, you know, being that because we have a lack of, you know, agency heads and then even a lot of that top layer level agency directors beneath the secretaries have been wiped out, you know, a lot of agencies are just in floating right now.
Yeah.
And it's allowing folk like Steve Bannon, and the other Steve to just run ruckshaw all over the place via executive order. One thing that was really encouraging through this whole ordeal over the weekend was Jim Mattis's, General Mattis's statement on the ban. You know, he called it unconstitutional. You know, Secretary Kelly, you know, took a stand, you know, against it. And I think, you know, one thing that may be a silver lining is that a lot of these appointments are, you know, for lack of better terms, establishment Republican appointments. That could serve as a real check against out of control advisors like Mike Flynn and Steve Bannon.
I must say, though, you know, if I were General Mattis, I would have heard myself being set up for the fall this weekend, because Trump was saying how he's sure that torture works, but he's going to defer to General Mattis. You know? And I couldn't help wondering if I was General Mattis, I would hear, I'm going to be the sacrificial lamb a year from now when things aren't magically improved, that I'll be kicked out the door. Well, I never should have listened to General Mattis. It was a kind of a strange thing to be saying. I completely know it works, but I'm going to do what Mattis says.
I'm going to try to get to the phones here, but on the way there, a couple of tweets have come in, and I want to read them. Snazhoe Theory tweeted in, "Give Trump a chance is meaningless jib-jab. He's the president of the damn country. That's his chance. What they mean is shut up, so no." And a scientist tweeted in, "Fully against the ban, and I need Governor Larry Hogan to tell me how universities in the state are going to be protected from the ban." That's an interesting question. I want to ask you about that question in a moment before we go to Hank, our next caller up. And Jackie Jones retweeted in, "He's already in violation of both federal law and the Constitution." Tweeted in at Mark Steiner. What about that?
I mean, it's a major issue. It's one that those of us in some form of administration on the university campus found ourselves contending with all weekend and trying to make sure we were in touch with our international students, making sure they had the resources and the information of what justifies their presence here and what, if any, their concerns of them returning. This is the first day of classes at UMBC. And so there was grave concern about making sure that our students were protected. And so far, we've seen in the University System of Maryland that they have been very supportive of our international students and willing to put forth and behind the resources necessary to make sure that they are taken care of.
Because there are a lot of students at UMBC that I know from being on the campus a lot who are Muslim.
Yes.
Who are from overseas.
Yes. Yes.
Women who wear hijabs.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right.
That's the community that we believe in and promote as our inclusive excellence.
So let me go to the phones here, 410-319-8888, let us go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Sorry, I was trying to read a tweet at the same time. Hank, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello?
Good morning, Hank. You're on the air.
How are you doing today, Mr. Steiner?
I'm very well, Hank.
I want to make a comment to one of your earlier callers, right? We don't particularly care for Obama either, right? He wasn't the best president. He bought more Africa than any white president ever had. And we've had World War I and World War II, right? So don't think that we all kumbaya over him, right? His policies were not the best policies for America, and anybody who follows politics will tell you that, right? He did more for big business than he did for any poor person in America, right? And here's what we need to do. Let the black and white go, right? It's those who have and those who don't. And we in indentured servants. And we need to start worrying, right? Last year, I posted something off of Facebook where the government had a meeting where they said that they had the wherewithal that if anything ever kicked off, they had housing for everybody military-wise. So in other words, what they're telling you is they already have martial law in play for us, right? We can show off all we want, but it's martial law in play for us. And who do you think the military is going to listen to? You think he's going to listen to the public man, or do you think he's going to listen to the person who tell him, look, man, I own you. You signed the piece of paper saying that this is da-da-da, this is da-da-da. You are not your own man. You are part of, you are owned by the government. Huh? We don't want Trump, but don't think that Obama was the greatest thing ever, because no, he wasn't. And look at where it got us next. Now, everybody who doesn't have $1 million or so is now in jeopardy. People can't leave that country because of what Obama has done.
Hank, Okay, gotcha, Hank. I appreciate the call. I think, you know, what you touch on here, Hank, I think in many ways is, and some of my panelists might disagree with me, but what we touch on here is one of the reasons why 10 million fewer people voted for Hillary Clinton than voted for Obama in 2008 because of the anger and disgust that Hank shows, and why so many people voted for Trump in the white world was just that. Was divided on race and other issues, mm-hmm. but that was real. People felt that, you know, a lot of people wanted to see Barack Obama come in and do just what Trump's doing from the other side, which is to come in with force and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to stop mortgage foreclosures. We're going to prosecute bankers. We're going to reinstitute something like Glass-Steagall. We're going to fight for the citizens of this country. And Obama didn't do that. And I think a lot of voters got really turned away from what they thought was going to be a different kind of political regime mm-hmm. in this country. I think Hank is not far wrong on some of what he's saying here.
Well, I think the change in votes, to the extent that there was a change in votes, was more anti-Clinton than anti-Obama, which isn't to say that the caller is wrong about Obama or right, but I think it was more, there was a much greater 25-year animus directed toward Hillary Clinton than anything.
So 5 million less voters voted for Obama in 2012 and voted for him in 2008.
Oh, right, yeah.
Didn't necessarily vote for the other side, but they didn't vote.
Well, it's always easier the first time. There's no question about it. I mean, that's just a fact.
Well, I think I have to lay that on his doorstep, though. I think.
Oh, I agree. Listen, you know, and there's no president who's ever going to produce magic. But, you know, we were talking off camera just a few minutes ago about Obamacare. The United States spends $9,400 per person per year on health care. In France, which has the best health care system in the world, they spend $4,400. That's $5,000 per person being looted off by interests. And it's never discussed. It wasn't discussed by President Obama. It's not discussed by Democrats. It's not discussed by the press corps. It's not, you're not allowed to hear about it. And that's where all the money's going. And that explains why when you hear about horror stories about Obamacare and deductibles, it's all that money that's being looted that creates that situation. It's never discussed.
Quick thoughts before we go back to the phones? All right, 410-319-8888. Thank you, Bob. 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Andrea.
So I'm still very fuzzy on the ban because I was at work when I heard about it, and I just hadn't really had time to research. But I just wondered, is it really feasible that they can really enforce this? And then, too, you know, the long-term effects, not even just the long-term, just the short-term. Because we are a country of immigrants, and we don't have to do the old cliche about who founded, who was here first, any of that. If we just deal with right now, we have so many people that attend, as you guys mentioned, college. Okay, not everybody's on a scholarship. Many people, their families send them over. So what happens? Do we send them back and give them refunds? So then you lose the tuition, you lose the housing, you lose on the airlines traveling back and forth. So, you know, I understand the emotional decision, and I understand the shift that, you know, that this wackadoodle president is trying to do. But at the end of the day, they do have their upper echelon that has money, but even with all their money, their entire money can't support the economy. And their money, they wouldn't even support the economy. They're only going to do pro themselves. So I understand this ban, and it's going to make them popular with some of the wackadoodles in this country. But at the end of the day, you know, how does it really affect our economy? And not to mention, I mean, tearing families apart. I mean, does it transcend down to people that married in to someone? Does it transcend down to someone that's maybe married, now they've gotten divorced, but they've been here 20 years? So that's what I'm just curious, because like I said, I haven't really had time to do a lot of research.
Anybody want to grab a hold?
Well, no one knows, including President Trump. So that's the beauty of it.
We shall wait and see.
Well, and again,
caller is not alone.
Bob, your earlier point about the back and forth and backing off of some things and then reinforcing others.
Chaos.
I mean, you know, it was clear that it meant everyone across the board. And then sometime during the weekend, all of a sudden, green card holders were then able to come. And so it's been this constant not understanding what the details details are and who is involved and who is implicated by this. All we know is that it is chaos. It is chaos.
And I think more chaos to come. Yes, I think that, and I think Republicans are in a panic.
Well, you know,
Democrats
are in a panic too.
Yes, different panic, in a panic.
Yes.
So, talk for a minute, Gene, just real quickly, about your conversations with your old Republican colleagues about what the panic means inside that many people are not hearing.
Well,
awkward situation.
It's okay. I'm built for these things. All right. Build jeans off. You have a couple groups of folk, all right? You have some folk like Lindsey and, you know, John McCain that, you know, for lack of a better term, just say F it. You know, we're going to do what we're going to do. They're national security hawks, and anything that threatens national security in their perspective, whether it be upstanding for constitutional rights or somebody violating constitutional rights while they also violate constitutional rights, they're going to call them out. And that's why you saw Lindsey Graham and John McCain take the stance that they take. You have folk like Marco Rubio and Senator Tim Scott who both have grave concerns about, the ban and how it's implemented, but took a little bit more of a diplomatic approach. You have other folk that are waiting to see how this thing plays out before they, decide to take a swing at the White House. At least for the next, we're literally 8 days into what minimally is a 2-year cycle. And if you're going to get things done like tax reform, if you're going to get things done like some kind of immigration bill some kind of border security bill, somebody like Paul Ryan, if previous action is a predictor for future precedent, under normal circumstances, probably would be out swinging on an issue like this as he did before. But, when we have grand bargains on a table and a very, very unpredictable White House, it kind of ties your hands a little bit. We have three co-equal branches. We're letting the judicial branch take the lead on it.
Right. And I'm not so sanguine about that either. But any comments before I hit the phones?
Yeah. I go back to the point that for Democrats, I feel like they are operating in this state of trauma. They are shell-shocked and not sure how to manage.
I'm telling you, man.
And unfortunately, that continues to hurt whatever efforts that they desire to speak on their behalf and those of their voters. And so even though we do see this mounting support happening in airports across the country, again, what I would say is that is not strategic in any sense of organizing. That is all solely emotional, like we got to get out there and demonstrate and show, but there has to be more depth to what's happening. And the Democratic Party needs to demonstrate some type of leadership to help that organizing, but also those who are on the grassroots, who I do believe are functioning and doing some of this, but it has to be done in a groundswell where there is more effort being done to organize and mobilize strategically and not just simply based on their emotional appeal.
Let me tell you, I'm not in the business of giving Democrats strategy points, but it would not hurt to have Senate Dems pick a confirmation vote, maybe like some like Senator Sessions that has a lot of issues, and hold an actual talking filibuster.
Well, most people Democrats do if they actually stand up in the Supreme Court nomination that's about to hit the floor here. Yeah. He says this
week.
He says it's going to this week.
Well, they've already been ruled on this. They had their chance to nominate a justice taken away from them last year, and they accepted that.
Yes.
And they're going to – no one has said, we're not going to work on any of your nominations until there are two of them and you have to nominate our guy first. They have been pre-rolled.
The chickens that come home to roost on them dealing away with the filibuster on a 60-vote filibuster.
That's true, but the Democrats didn't just did not fight
they
back.
Rolled.
They rolled.
Yeah.
They rolled.
And we appreciate
they,
it.
And they thought they were going to win. They thought
keep
that Hillary
rolling,
Clinton,
baby.
They thought Hillary Clinton was going to win.
They did.
And that's created a bad strategy.
So Sarah Fonlier tweeted in at Mark Steiner in response to our tweet out, a chance to weaken public ed, civil rights, international relations, access to health care, environmental and consumer protections, question mark. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And let's go to Gene. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, hello, everybody.
Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
Yeah, so is the Wackadoodles a part of the Know-Nothing Party and the Whigs, with the Whigs? Are they with the Whigs?
Well, they're close.
Oh, okay.
They're close to the
They're the fake news party.
We are kind of skimming the 21st century version of Know-Nothings. I think that could be true, yes.
Okay, alternative facts party.
That's an insider joke anyway. you have to be a historian to kind of figure that one out. But anyway, my question is when doing the Carter administration, I was at Morgan in the 70s, and when he sent all the Iranians home, is this similar to this? What, you know?
That's a good question, Gene. I mean, Carter didn't exactly send all the Iranians home.
Well, they disappeared from Morgan's campus.
What you say? They disappeared from Morgan's campus? I love it. That's great. They disappeared from Morgan's campus. But what he did do is he would not renew the visas. I think 430 people were deported, 5,000 left voluntarily. This took place only during the period of time that the hostages were being held captive in Tehran.
Okay. Well, you know, is the pushback the same? I guess maybe that's the question. Mm-hmm.
There was no pushback because I think it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I remember. I mean, I'm getting up there, and my memory is.
And it's all right, man. We're all getting up there. Some of us are.
But have a great day, and I'm gonna listen to what.
Right. Yeah, I think there was no pushback back then because the country as a whole, no matter what your political views were horrified by the taking of
That's
the hostages
right.
in Tehran.
That's right.
Some of us had analysis back then saying that our policies going back to the overthrow of Mossadegh and installing the Shah had a lot to do with what we saw. Mm-hmm. But I think that people were just really very upset by the taking these hostages.
Was I mean,
really,
and that was government was pushback against a government action, you know, an American government pushback against an Iranian government action.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of a different situation.
Right. Very different situation. And they said, even in that ban, he said, those who were fleeing persecution from Iran would be allowed in, Carter said at that point as well. So, I mean, it really is a different situation. Mm-hmm. Completely different.
Kind of
you notice those of us that weren't present, we're quiet.
I said, just kind of before my time.
Yeah, well, that really hurt a lot.
She knew I was quiet.
A little jab there. You old people up here, you remember, we don't.
I'm just happy to be at the grown folks' table.
I'm just going by what I've read. I've heard this.
All right, now 410-319-8888. So I'm curious where you think this does take us. I mean, where do you? I mean, we're seeing events unfold in all seriousness that are pretty frightening in terms of the American body politic that we've never really seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, even when Richard Nixon attempted to do what he did with the National Security Council, he was stopped after a period of time from putting the politicals on and taking everybody off. Not that I'm. Not to get into arguing about the CIA here, but I mean, so, but we're seeing things happen here that, to me, you know, Bob Summerby are just. I saw the article by the Hopkins professor, the therapist, who was talking about all the kind of things that he thought were wrong with Donald Trump mentally. He does feel like our president is not stable. That he doesn't read, he doesn't think deeply. His knowledge of the English language is like. No more, you know. We talk about inner city kids. We talk about inner city kids not being able to articulate their things in a depth because of the way we don't teach children the right way in our schools. We don't care about them. What?
Yeah,
that's
would
Donald
guess,
Trump.
I would guess he may be dyslexic, and that doesn't mean you're not intelligent.
No, it has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and that's fine. Nelson Rockefeller was apparently dyslexic, and he was an effective governor of the state of New York. I just think the conversation has, you know, it's very unfortunate because the Goldwater rule, you don't discuss psychiatry, is in any normal situation an important rule. But I just think there's going to be so much continuing chaos and the behavior and thought processes are so erratic. I don't see how we can continue talking about. Is he lying or is it just a falsehood? I mean, it's clearly goes well
it's
beyond that.
Fact.
It goes well beyond that. And I just think we're living in a dream world if we don't find a way to discuss it.
So here's my only pushback to that, Bob,
yeah.
Because I actually do suspect there's something there. And certainly my psychology colleagues are all, you know, when you say, oh, he's narcissist, they say yes and five other of those items in the DSM, right? But my pushback on that is then it almost gives him an out, or it explains away what he has done to our nation. And that becomes a problem for me. And I also think it lets off so many of the voters who said this is the person that we wanted at the table, that they saw so much in the qualities that he exhibited that they said that is the face of America and that is the cowboy that we need to be managing the ranch and taking care of things. And so for me, I struggle to say, well, let's just accept that there's mental health issues here and that explains it, when that then lets everyone off the hook. And I don't think folks should be let off the hook.
Well, I'm in favor of accurate explanation. And I don't, and it does let someone off the hook. If someone is mentally ill, quote unquote, I'm not a psychiatrist, by the way, so I don't even know what that means. But if someone is, quote unquote, mentally ill, in many cases, that morally, that does let them off the hook. It just means they shouldn't be in a position of great power. And it should be a point. I think we're in a very dangerous situation. I think this is dangerous, and I think it has to be discussed.
So I would agree with that point, because I think it could certainly lead to the nation saying this is someone that needs to be removed from office. I don't think that's the direction that organizing should be focused on.
Yeah, not that that's ever going to happen. If we're going to have an intelligent discussion,
right,
we can't act like this is not very, very strange
and
behavior.
And so what I would say, because I do agree that there is strange behavior, is that we need to focus on how vulnerable this makes us as a nation. Because to assume that the cowboy is taking care of the ranch and putting everyone else in their place, you've got to imagine that there are other egos on the other side of the world that are similar to his. And their response to that is, let's show him, or let's do a one-upman, instead of simply believing that he is who he is and we need to listen to him. I think there will be direct response to that, unfortunately, and it is us as the average American citizen that suffers the consequence.
So let me try to get one quick call in here. Do we have time for one quick thought from a listener before we have to roll? 410-319-8888. Brenda, quick thought. Welcome. Brenda?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I just had a quick question.
Sure.
I know initially there were 12 folks that were held at the airport, and then I saw the number hit the airports, and I saw the number had dropped, had escalated to around 109. Has everyone been released?
That's a great question.
Are they still being held?
I've been following it, and from what I've seen from there and from newspapers across the country is that most of the immigrants that have not been sent back to the countries they came from have been released. That's what I've read. I don't know the exact number, but I've...
Yeah, there's still some that are being held still, but a good majority have been released.
And I think that's because every airport's handling it differently, because nobody knows what they're supposed to do.
I think we should send them to nice hotels and make Mexico pay for it.
They're going to build the wall as well, right?
Thank you, Brendan, so much for the call. Appreciate it. So let me thank our guests. It's been a great discussion.
Yes.
That last comment, of course, was from Bob Somerby, editor of the Daily Howler. Good to have you here. Eugene Craig III, former vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, associate professor of American Studies at UMBC, co-host and guest host on the Mark Steiner Show, and author. Good to have
I'm
you.
I'm looking forward to retiring this guy right here.
Well. Thank you so much for being with you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be with Kevin Kamenetz, Baltimore County Executive. Stay with us. Get ready for the conversation. Don't go away.